Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show, with great guests and great laughs, all call home. Now, from the Man Cave Studios in New Jersey, here are your hosts of the Bottom Line Sports Show.
Wow, good evening, everybody. Gerald Brown here on the Tuesday night edition of the Bottom Line Sports Show. I think I'm rolling solo. And, again, it's so interesting because, again, where you have the NCAA tournament starts tonight, and it's over already now for FDU, and it's interesting. I think it's tough. It's just so difficult. It's over. It's over. That might be a little harsh and extreme, but Florida Gulf Coast, they're going to play North Carolina, 96-65. Easy win over the Knights of Fairleigh Dickinson University. And, you know, that's the beauty of the NCAA tournament. We're going to talk about the beauty of the NCAA tournament. So much is happening. We're going to break down some brackets with Vash Tyhert. We're going to talk about the NFL and possibly the NFL Players Association deciding to start taking the power that you know, Roger Goodell, the judge, the jury, and the executioner, taking that power away from him. And it's a kind of startling surprise because, I don't know, is this all predicated on the fact that perhaps the league felt embarrassed by the situation transpired with Tom Brady? So we'll discuss that. We'll also talk with free agent Mario Manningham of the free agent, you know, former Giant and just 49er. We'll talk with Mario in terms of how much do you look at this year's free agency crop in terms of, wide receiver draft core crop. You know, how much do you look at that and possibly say that, you know what, if you need a wide receiver, you better be in a situation where you try to get a free agent or whatever. It's a lot of work out there. So we'll talk with him about that. I'll break down my brackets. You know, it's one of those years. I don't know. It's just everybody can get, you know, pretty much have an opportunity to win the NCAA tournament. And, you know, that perfect bracket, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to find out that out. We'll talk about Carmelo Anthony's comments about, you know, the Knicks have to do something relevant in the free agency world. We'll talk about that. And on our journey to the NFL, we'll talk with draft prospect Emmanuel Agbaje, defensive stud, tight end, defensive stud for Texas A&M. We'll talk with him as the combine is over. You have your pro day. That's on tap. We'll talk with him and just how much this whole process has been for him thus far. And the finish line is right around the corner. We'll do that. We'll get into more draft talk. We'll talk brackets. Your phone calls, 347-324-5839, 347-324-5839. So, as I mentioned, you know, one thing I love about the NCAA tournament is that, you know, that Saturday or that Sunday, you see all the teams, you know, they get their opportunity to have their one shining moment. You know, they're introduced and they, you know, they make the tournament, they win their conference tournament. They're part of an elite group of people and teams that are playing. But the reality is you get on that big stage, and a lot of the times it could be very, very daunting. It could be something where inevitably you've won. So I don't know. It's so difficult for me to, you know, look at that and say, you know, it's been a success because it's over, you know, and to play in the – I just have problems with the playing game. I think the playing game is so difficult because you start out playing on a Tuesday night. Everybody else, for the most part, will start out playing tomorrow or Thursday, Friday, And then, you know, you'll have some company, but it's like you're the first team out. And that has to be a very, very tough and difficult situation. And most bracket pools that I participate in, they don't even count the Tuesday and Wednesday night games and stuff. And it's just tough. But, I mean, the haves and the have-nots. And Greg Arenda, great coach. We had the opportunity of having him on our SiriusXM show this past Sunday and really just talking about the whole process. You feel good. You feel bad for it, you know, but I think looking back on it, it was a great, great run, and it's just unfortunate to see how this played out for them. But 96-65, Florida Gulf Coast, and this is a program that they burst on the scene with the Lob City and really beat some, I think, Georgetown and beat some different programs, and their head coach was able to parlay that into an opportunity where I think he had been like a journeyman and assistant coach and, you know, just really just struggling to get an opportunity. And I think he was able to parlay that in. I mean, for a fact, he was able to parlay that into an opportunity to coach major college basketball and, you know, move on. And so it's one of those things where, ironically, you know, he's in the tournament. His team is in the tournament, and I know pretty much, if anything, having to have at least a couple of kids that Andy Enfield recruited are a part of that program. So it's just one of those things. But, again, it's so difficult to be that first team out. So difficult. 3-4-7-3. Just looking at everything that's happening, you know, I don't know which direction you can go with these brackets. I really don't. I really, really don't. And like I said before, it's kind of, you know, I don't really feel it because, you know, my Louisville Cardinals in there. You know, they're not there. And, you know, you just continue to hear the conversation centered around this whole scandal. You know, Coach Pitino's continuing to talk. But nevertheless, let's bring on somebody that knows a thing or two about the brackets, college basketball extraordinaire, you know, CarolinaBlitz.com. You check her out. Vastai Hurd is joining us now here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Vastai, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Hey, glad to be on. I'm excited about March Madness.
I want to ask you first and foremost, let's go back to Sunday when the brackets were announced. How surprised were you that a team like Monmouth, more than ever, because I watch Monmouth a lot. You know, I saw them play Georgetown. We were all introduced to the young men that were doing the, you know, antics on the side and doing all that stuff. How surprised were you that the fact is that they were not in the field of 65?
You know, it still shows that, you know, the selection committee is still not convinced that these mid-majors are worthy of these, you know, of these outright bids. And so even though we always have one that, you know, comes through, and it's also a business. So, you know, if you have to choose between, let's say, a Syracuse and a Monmouth, which one are you going to choose? You're going to choose a team that has the greater fan base. And so, you know, that, I mean, I look at it from a business perspective, and then I look at it that the selection committee, even though, you know, time and time again we're proven that these mid-majors belong on this stage, they don't necessarily feel the same way.
Yeah, I think it's sort of hypocritical of the selection committee to say you got to go out and play these teams. And more importantly, you got to go out and play these teams. But we're seeing guys that go out and play these teams, schools that go out and they're beating them. And I just thought that was very difficult. And, I get the playing games. I think that's the great idea, and I think it's great. But I want to ask you this in terms of the playing games featuring teams that perhaps winning their conference. Should it be a situation that we could possibly see teams that don't win their conference championship forced to play those playing games? My heart goes out to Fairleigh Dickinson, and I noticed that they're playing tonight, and obviously they lost to Florida Gulf Coast. I just think that you know, when you win your championship, your reward should be able to participate maybe Thursday and Friday. Agree or disagree with that?
You know, I actually agree with that, Gerald, and I think you make a good point. To go through and win a conference tournament is not easy. And you have other teams that are rewarded. You look at a Virginia. Virginia got a number one seed, and they lost in the conference championship. They didn't even win their conference. They didn't even win the regular season conference championship. And then I think that teams who go in and they go through that conference and they win, I think they should be rewarded with not having to play a play-in game. So I absolutely agree with that.
Vashti Hurd joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. 347-324-5839. If you look at this tournament as a whole, how difficult is it for you to really find one team that you can say, you can put your finger on and say, you know what, they would be my proverbial favorite to win it all?
It's very difficult. And we are, you know, Gerald, we've been talking about the parity in college basketball for like the last couple of years. And I think this year, you know, and we say this every year, but I think there's more parity than ever. I can't look at this bracket and say, oh, I think that, you know, this team has an easy road or a definite road to the Final Four. I think all of the number one seeds have their weaknesses. I'm not even convinced that, you know, some will say North Carolina is the most talented squad. I'm not even convinced that it's going to be easy for them to go to the Final Four. I think an ESPN writer even has them losing in the first weekend. It's just, it's hard because you never really know which team is going to get hot, who's going to pull an upset. Say, you know, we have a upset happen in the first weekend. That throws the entire bracket off, and that may make it easier for the top seed in that regional. I just, you know, I don't really have a team. I haven't even filled out the bracket yet. I've been waiting on these play-in games, and I have no idea who I'm going to pick for my Final Four. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think that this year it's so up in the air. And with that being said, is that good for college basketball? I mean, is there such thing as saying there's too much parity now? If you look at this year, it seems like it's a lot of parity. You know, is this a situation that perhaps the college basketball could sink or swim if with this whole situation of a lot of parity, like we could see moving forward? If we have an entertaining and unbelievable NCAA tournament, you know, does this give hope to say that parity works? Or is it a situation that if we end up with, I filled out one bracket, and I think I filled out, I had Oregon winning it. And I said, you know what, I have Oregon. Yeah, I have Oregon winning it. And if that's the case where you have so much of these sort of non-traditional teams participating, do you think that possibly too much parity will hurt moving forward?
You know, I talked to some people, and some people, well, not here in North Carolina, we watch college basketball year-round, but there are a lot of people who don't watch until March. Because they love that idea of an underdog being able to run the table and make a Sweet 16 appearance, or, you know, somebody being, you know, the David versus Goliath thing. They love the fact that, you know, Mercer was able to beat Duke that year. People love to see that, and they love the excitement that comes with that. Does it hurt college basketball as a whole? I don't think so. You know, March Madness is, you know, college basketball's premier time. College basketball owns March, and it's because of this tournament, and it's because you never know what is going to happen. And if it becomes predictable, then it's not fun anymore.
Vashti Hurd joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown, 347-324-5839. So everybody seems to be apparently very relatively healthy as we move into this NCAA tournament. Is there a team or a player that you feel that you will have your eye on throughout this whole tournament?
When it comes, and probably because I've been watching them and I've been paying close attention to them being in North Carolina, and everybody knows I've grown up a Duke fan, but Bryce Johnson Bryce Johnson. North Carolina will go as far as Bryce Johnson takes them. Marcus Paige has been par, if not sub. I think he's been subpar on the season. He had a flash during the ACC tournament where he had one good game. But Bryce Johnson has been the nucleus, the drive, the heart of that North Carolina team. And if he has an off game, then, you know, I think that they could be beaten. But as far as these number one seeds, Hill for Oklahoma, I think he's an awesome player. I would say that's who I'm watching. I'm watching Bryce Johnson. I want to see how he does during this NCAA tournament. He went from, you know, maybe being a second round pick to now him being, you know, mid first round pick, possibly even a lottery that might be pushing it. But I'm really looking to see how he reacts this year in the NCAA tournament.
It should be interesting. In fact, your Duke Blue Devils, you look at them. I have them getting to perhaps maybe the Final Four, at least the Elite Final, I mean, Elite Eight. I just, the way the bracket shapes out, I mean,
yeah.
Aside, I know how you feel about them personally, but feelings aside, how do you like their sort of draw in terms of what they'll be able to do moving forward?
As a four seed, I would say that Duke has to be very happy with the bracket that they have gotten. If they play to their potential, it's you know, arguably an easy road to, you know, to at least a Sweet 16 and possibly the Elite Eight. I'm not convinced with Oregon. I just am not convinced. I'm just not convinced with that squad. I'm not convinced with that conference, their conference. And so I think they have an easy road to the Elite Eight and possibly, I mean, the Sweet 16 and possibly even the Elite Eight. It just really, you know, Duke, they have no depth. And that showed in their loss to Notre Dame in the ACC tournament when, you know, they just got tired. Everybody started getting in foul trouble. You know, Plumlee just did not have a good game. So I think I'll have Duke at least going to the Elite Eight. I would have them beating Oregon. So they have to be extremely happy with the draw that they've gotten.
Yeah, I have them losing perhaps to Oregon, but I don't see them having any trouble, obviously, with UNC, Wilmington, as well as Baylor, and then whoever comes out of, you know, I don't see them. I see them perhaps maybe running into, you know, Oregon and having some problems with that. But the thing about them, you know, if they get by Oregon, I don't see the winner. I don't see Oklahoma or anybody in that bottom field of the bracket, in the West bracket. I don't see them posing any threat. And the team that perhaps maybe provides, maybe if anything, the one team that I think that, again, like we said, you know, it's any team can win it this year. I don't really believe in Kansas. I think Kansas has a nice break for them. But I just – something about them when it comes to March, and especially where you're expected to win, Bill Self hasn't been able to do that on a consistent basis. Great regular season, but really they've been very, very shaky when it's come to the postseason. And, you know, I just – their track record, I don't know. I could see them tripping up against if Arizona is to advance or if Miami is able to get past. I wouldn't be surprised if they tripped up against a team like Villanova if they're able to get there. But not really.
I'm not convinced with Villanova, but check out Maryland. I think that
Maryland. You know what? No, I'm not doing that because you know what? You know, Vasai, I looked at Maryland. They played, I believe it was a Purdue team. And I think that Purdue team, you know, it's just some of the decisions that they make on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, when I've seen them play, it seems sometimes they've played down to the level of the competition, turning the ball over. And, you know, I thought that they should have been in a situation, them instead of Michigan State, winning the Big Ten or at least getting to the championship game. I just don't see it with them. Just really don't. I'm just not really sold on them as a group.
You know, the other thing that shocked me was that Michigan State won their conference tournament and got snubbed for first seed in the tournament. I would have thought after they won their conference tournament that they would have been a lot for the number one seed. That was another thing that really was like, wow, you know, Michigan State with a record of 29-5 and they won their conference tournament, got the number two seed over Virginia, who was 26-7.
Well, I think maybe just based upon the strength of schedule. I think if you look at the ACC and what Virginia was able to do, you know, it's just one of those things where you sit back. I'm not really that surprised. I think it was really splitting hairs between Virginia and you know, Michigan State. And it's just interesting. I mean, you know, if you look at majority of the number one seeds, Kansas won theirs. We know North Carolina won their conference tournament. But I don't know. Michigan State played very well. But I think if you look at the whole Big Ten this year, you know, Ohio State was down. I think Michigan was subpar. Really, a lot of people questioned them getting in the tournament. So Maryland was good. But the powers that be, I don't think that the conference as a whole was that strong, although that they had a great representation in the tournament. I just don't think that they were that strong. And so, you know, I could see them moving back to a two seed. But, I mean, look, I think it works out well in their favor. I think that they can come out of that Midwest. And, you know, Tom Izzo's track record has been phenomenal. So it's going to be one that bears watching and to see how things play out. Your thoughts, and real quickly before we let you get on out of here, your thoughts in terms of just, if anything, do you possibly see some of the coaches, you know, there's a couple of jobs that open up and stuff. Do you see a coach or a team that perhaps, if anything, a coach that could get hot and sort of make a name for itself in this NCAA tournament? And what school
you mean? Kind of like the Florida Gulf Coast coach that did.
Yes, Andy Enfield.
Yeah, great example.
Exactly. Yes.
Who's
that Cinderella team that you perhaps could see doing something in the NCAA tournament?
You know, that's a difficult one because I really, you know, I don't consider Wichita State a Cinderella anymore because we all know that they're a good squad and they're a good team. I don't see a team as unknown as, let's say, a Florida Gulf Coast being able to run the table like they did that one year. I don't really see a team being able to do that.
Yeah, we see 5 versus 12 always, the 12 seed upset in the 5 seed, so it always happens. So it remains to be seen, but it's something that bears watching.
Maybe Yale over Baylor.
Big 12 was just so tough, but I mean, again, that's the beauty of the tournament, and you just never know. So I mean,
you could see
that happening. But, oof, that would be so tough. You know, that's why I said this year, you know, if you look at the conferences, can you say a guy is strong? If you could say that perhaps a team is strong and stuff like that, could they do something like that and beat one of the high-power teams and stuff? I just don't know. It's just, I mean, I don't know. This year is going to be very interesting. And anybody that walks away with a champion that they have those perfect brackets, I mean, I would be very, very surprised. Talk about
I don't think lucky. Anybody's going to have a perfect bracket. I think people's brackets will go up in flames after that first weekend. There's going to be a one or two seed that goes down in this first weekend. It's just a matter of who.
Yeah, that's the case. Listen, Vasta, always a pleasure. Really appreciate you jumping on the line and definitely look forward to talking to you as the tournament progresses.
Certainly. Thanks, Gerald.
Vasta Herd joining us. CarolinaBlitz.com. Check out all the work. Unbelievable work she does. Definitely a sweetheart of a person and knows of basketball. And I don't hold it against her because the Duke Blue Devils are our team, and I don't like them. I don't like them at all. 347-324-5839 is the number. It's the NCAA tournament. Now Wichita State is down to Vanderbilt, and that should be an interesting game. And it's something about these NCAA tournament games that's taking place. So should be Bears watching. We'll definitely make sure we keep an eye on that as the it's here. March Madness is here. And if you're not a basketball fan, I mean, even a novice basketball fan becomes a fan around this time of the year. It's one thing that's really interesting to see how it plays out moving forward. It's definitely something that bears watching to see how it goes. So Florida Gulf Coast is the first team. Just all the situations that's happening, and you look at it, it's good. It's good. I think March Madness is great. It's one of those interesting times. Let's switch gears right now, and it's always a pleasure to, you know, this time of the year, you got so much happening. It seems like it's the sporting world coming to a head and meeting in the middle. You still got your winter sports and hockey and basketball taking place. We still got remnants of NFL free agency. We got draft talk. We got college basketball. We got baseball getting ready to come into the mix. And obviously the NBA, as I mentioned, and so forth. And this time of the year, we always have a treasure and a treat to bring on gentlemen who are really going through the whole process of the journey to the NFL. In a segment we always do here, here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Texas A&M defensive stud gentleman Emmanuel Akbar is joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Emmanuel, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, sir. How are you doing?
I can't complain, Gerald, bro. I hope I didn't butcher your name.
Yeah, you didn't, but you got the school wrong. It's Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State. I said Texas A&M. I'm sorry. You're a Cowboy. I'm sorry. I don't know. Is that Oklahoma State? This man is a cow. Please, my humblest apologies. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
You know what? I feel bad because I'm embarrassed because I did watch the Oklahoma State Cowboys this year, and I totally apologize about that. But first and foremost, man, I want to ask you in terms of just this whole process that you're going through right now. Talk about your experience with the draft combine. What were your thoughts on the draft combine you had?
This process has been great. You know, it's been, I'll say, stressful too, as well as so great moments. You know, I got the chance to go to the combine, which every college football player dream of going, and I got to say, I got a chance to show my skills and talent on the big stage, and I'll say it was a blessing to me. I really enjoyed my experience at the combine.
Yeah. Now, how much of that whole process itself? Because I know you guys, obviously, you start training once the season is over. You know, you guys had a great, great season. You know, just talk about just the, you know, from a mental standpoint, because it's, look, you're human. You can't help but think about, you know, how April's going to play out and being able to hear your name called and stuff. What is the sort of balance where you try to make sure that you don't focus too much on April and put too much pressure on yourself going through this whole process?
Well, like I like to put myself, I mean, you don't know, you don't make the decisions. They have to make decisions. Just, I like to tell myself to do what you can do now to help, you know, like I have individual workouts routines. You know, I just have to be in shape and be ready to go out there and work out as well I can, you know, to get my stock up high, you know, just do what I can, do what I can control, you know. I don't control who drafts me. You know, the team decides which guys they want to draft. So just that's how I just stay calm and just manage what you can control. So,
no, that's good. Now, in terms of what, if you know, obviously interviewed by tons of teams, this draft is, you know, predicted to really, really have a lot of stud defensive ends like yourself, and your name is projected to be called very early. What is it that, if there's anything, did you feel like you wanted teams to know and got that opportunity to let teams know during the whole process of interviewing at the combine? What was the main thing that you wanted teams to know about you?
Well, I wanted them to know, you know, I'm a humble guy in person. You know, I'm a hard worker. And also, I'm a pretty talented guy, you know, like coming into the combine, a lot of people thought I wasn't very athletic. I was pretty stiff, and I just felt like I worked hard enough in during training for the combine, and I actually proved them wrong. So feel good about that.
Manuel Ogbar joining us here. Oklahoma State Cowboys joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Gerald Brown, Howie C. And now it's on to pro days. I don't know. Are you scheduled to have your pro day? Has it come and gone, or are you already, or is it coming up?
Oh, it's already come and gone. I had it on the 8th of March.
And talk about just that whole process of having your pro day. So, and just now that whole thing is over, and if you're going to work out for teams, that would just be pretty much at the team's discretion. Talk about just that whole process of having your pro day.
It was fun having my pro day. It was fun coming back to my alma mater, training, showing off my skills in front of scouts. And it was good seeing my teammates again. It was a great process. It's nothing like the combine, so I feel like it was a great and smooth process. Not as stressed as the combine, I would say, though. So
yeah, it's just going through that. And now you have this situation where you're interviewing and going to possibly be working out with teams. Now you can see, and like we said before, it's this time of the year where everything just comes into play, where all the sports sort of meet in the middle. Do you allow yourself to now start thinking about what draft day is going to be like? Do you allow yourself to do so now as you kind of see that, as we get into March and April's right around the corner?
Well, me, I don't like focusing on much of the future. I like focusing on the now and what I can do now. That's how I like. I think that's what, like, keeps me calm and level-headed, So that's how I am.
Yeah, no, it's a great way to really approach it. Do you want, if anything, what's the motivation? Do you feel that you still have a lot to prove before the draft, Manuel, as we get into the sort of the latter stages of March? Do you feel that you still have something to prove to teams?
I mean, I'll say I have a lot of film out there. I'm a very productive guy, as you could tell by my stats and also my film. And also, I interviewed with a lot of teams. They tell my high football IQ, and I just felt like if you want me to prove more, just invite me for more workouts. Just see if there's something I'm missing, because I feel like I have a lot of tape already out there. So if you're still missing something from me, let me know, and we could work on it.
Yeah. Now, in terms of just obviously looking at a lot of the teams out there, listen, you're going to be drafted very high. And clearly you're going to be in a situation that perhaps obviously I don't want to put you on the spot to say, what team would you like to go. If you could sort of identify what would be the ideal situation and setting, team-wise, what type of setting would it be, without naming a team or anything like that, what would be the ideal team situation or situation, setting, best fit for you?
Well, I want to go to a team with a great coach, a great mentor, as well as coach, could get a great young man. I'm ready to play whatever position a team wants me to play. I'm just ready to go out there and do my best and win a Super Bowl and help them win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And last but definitely not least, Manuel Ogbar joining us here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. If you look at this situation, and I know you said you'd obviously deal with the present, the current, now. We're starting to get into that tail end of March, a few more weeks away from April will be here. When will you start to allow yourself to start thinking about your plans? If you're going to be at the draft, will you be at home and doing things of that nature? Are you going to have a barbecue? Are you going to have the family over? When will you start to allow yourself to start thinking about those plans and preparations? Or have you already started to do so?
I mean, it'll be here in a couple of days. I still have to sit down, talk to my family, and talk to my agent to see what will be best for me to do. So, it's just a decision I'll have to come up with in a couple of days, well, soon.
Yeah, so you're keeping it close to the vest. I got to find out and ask you this last but definitely not least here on Bottom Line Sports Show. When you hear your name called, do you think you'll cry? Oh, and what will be that emotion? Do you think you'll cry? I'm just trying to find out. I mean, I think, and listen, if I'm in that situation, I'm walking across that stage where I'm at home, my family and friends, I'm crying because this is an opportunity that not too many individuals, I would let the tears flow out like it's a faucet. I'd be crying. I might take 3 minutes and be all on the floor hooping and hollering because I know that, you know what, part of my dream has been achieved. Are you looking at it like that, or are you just going to be that Oklahoma State Cowboy that you are and just going to be in a situation where, you know what, you're just going to be calm, cool, and collective?
See, I see myself more of a calm, cool, and collected, but you know, it'll be a dream come true. So I don't know. I might cry. I don't know. My body's gonna react. So I don't know what to say.
So. Oh man, hey, listen, definitely enjoy that experience because you only get drafted once. And the opportunities, and definitely start preparing to learn how to say the word no, as Charles Barkley will always say. Most young athletes that are coming into professional sports field need to make sure that they know how to say and when to say it, and use it on a consistent basis when necessary. Listen, man, listen, really, really appreciate you jumping on the line with us. Continue success in all that you do, and look, do us a favor. After you get drafted, you're going to be in contact with Christina and the great folks over at Rosenhaus Sports. Come back on the show after the whole process, you know, rookie camp and all that stuff settles down, and let us know how that whole process has played out for you, my friend, because definitely I've seen you play in college, and obviously, again, you're a stud, and I know that the future is definitely going to be bright and really expecting you to do great, great things on the NFL level.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me a part.
Always a pleasure. Manuel Ugbah, Oklahoma State Cowboys, again, one of the top defensive ends in the country, stud here on the Bottom Line Sports Show. Talented. Very, very talented. Very talented. Very, very talented player. Young man, it's definitely going to hear his name called. I feel like a goofball. You know, he dropped the ball with that in terms of, you know, call him Texas A&M. I don't know why I said Texas A&M. That was really interesting to see that. But young man, you know, getting ready for that whole process is a very, very interesting one. Just going through the whole process to see how things are, you know, playing out for them. And you know, I don't know, if free agency, how the effect it's going to play on a lot of these guys moving forward, you know, in terms of how drafting, because, I don't think anybody really believed and thought that Brock Osweiler would leave the Denver Broncos. I just didn't. I really did not believe whatsoever that Osweiler would leave the Denver Broncos. And now took a step back, and we saw that, you know, it was a little personal perhaps, you know, in terms of the decision when, you know, Manning went back to the starting quarterback. And, you know, people always say, hey, you know, it's, you know, sometimes when does it not become about winning? You know, when does winning in the NBA or in professional sports is not the main issue? I mean, I thought Osweiler got big money. I thought it was great that he decided to leave. You know, it was too much money to turn down. And free agency is going to play a role on this upcoming NFL draft. You know, I mean, Mark Sanchez got a job. It's going to be a big, big role moving forward. It's just one of those things that I'm not really sold on the draft wide receiver core. I think that this draft is really, really stocked and loaded with a lot of defensive ends. Cornerbacks seem to be a very high premium that moving forward, you will see a lot of those guys really taken early. And it's going to be really interesting. So it was great to talk to Oklahoma State's defensive end and stud, Manuel Ugbah, who's going to be a terror I think he's going to be unbelievable. I've seen him play with Oklahoma State, and they were very, very successful this season in the Big 12. So it should be really interesting to see how it plays out. But if you're looking for a wide receiver, if you're looking for a quarterback, that's why I think that the whole thing with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I spoke about this last night on ESPN New York in terms of, you know, the market dictates that guys get enormous amounts of money. Brock Osweiler got $37 million guaranteed. Never mad at him for that. A lot of people might point to that being the real reason for him leaving Denver. And if he would have said it was about the money, I wouldn't have had no problem whatsoever. $37 million in such a violent physical sport, getting that guaranteed, you know, that's amazing. Because, you know, Houston can't take that back. Can't take that back at all. Tom is calling in. Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
All right. What's on your mind?
Not too much. I was telling your guy that I just tuned in about a minute ago, so I'm
okay.
Not entirely positive what you guys are talking about, but if you give me what you guys have been talking about, I can definitely chime in.
NFL free agency. We just had Emmanuel Ogba on of Oklahoma State, who's getting ready for the draft and our journey to the NBA, journey to the NFL segment. We're talking a little NFL free agency and how it's going to affect the draft moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've definitely seen some surprising moves. I mean, the Osweiler move going away from Denver, I'm definitely stunned by that on multiple sides. I think for Houston, it's an interesting risk. And for Denver, I think it's a pretty gutsy call, right? I mean, with the way quarterbacks set up in the NFL right now, I mean, you can't even say there are 30 good ones right now. So To let a young talented quarterback like that just walk over what amounts to probably $15 or $20 million, which in the NFL is nothing. I was pretty stunned that they were willing to do that. I think that if they had not won a Super Bowl and Elway didn't feel secure in that job, I think there's no chance you see Osweiler walk. But it's definitely interesting. I mean, I'm pretty surprised Denver did that because they have a win-now team. Even if Osweiler's not incredible, in this day and age, $72 million over 5 or 6 years for a quarterback is really not that much. And I was pretty stunned to see them let him walk.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tom, you got to think about it. Look, they won a Super Bowl. I don't think anybody thought that Osweiler would leave. I thought that they went on this whole notion that, you know, he was going to be their guy. He was sort of groomed for the position. They just won a Super Bowl. He was going to be there for years to come. But clearly, the money that, you know, Houston did. And keep in mind, Houston did this years ago when they went out and got an unproven guy in Matt Schaub, who was really, again, a backup in Atlanta. Came out and about, and again, they had some success. Was he a franchise quarterback? I mean, I don't know. You can probably argue that, but for a young man that's 25 years old, played at a high level and on a team in a high-level pressure situation, yes, the body of work is very, very small. I think it was a very calculated risk by the Houston Texans because you just said it. There's no way in the world that you could say that there are 30 proven franchise quarterbacks in the league. In fact, arguably, we might even say there might be 4 to 5 guys in the total entire NFL that you can hands down say they are proven franchise quarterbacks. That is a position that's very difficult. I just mentioned prior to you coming on,
yeah,
talking about the Jets with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He wants $12 to $15 million a year, and yet he's a guy that's been approved a journeyman. And it, you know, I don't think that's a smart move to really tie up so much money with a quarterback, especially when you're in a situation where it's a win now mentality. But Denver's in a great situation. Look, they just won a Super Bowl. Elway is a godsend in Denver. I think he delivered something that he wasn't able to do a couple of years back when they got hammered by the Seattle Seahawks. He's rectified that. And, you know, his track record of making moves has worked out. But I think everybody was caught off guard by this whole situation, you know.
I mean, what I would
appreciate
say
the call,
the
Tom.
Texans, what I would say for the Texans, I mean, this is a fantastic move on their end.
Yes.
You know, I think even when they got, I would say even when they got Schaub, right? And Schaub was a similarly risky proposition. They had to give up 2 second-round picks to get him. I believe that was what the trade was. I mean, how often do you see a young 25-year-old quarterback who has legitimate upside and defense being great or not led his team to a few wins, and you just see that quarterback change hands in free agency with no franchise? I mean, this, you don't see this in the NFL. It just doesn't really
happen. No, and I mean, it was a mind-boggling thing. And you know, look, he said, and I think a lot of people were scratching their heads when he said that he thinks it's a great situation. I might have to agree with him. I mean, I don't know if Lamar Miller is perhaps an upgrade over Arian Foster, because Foster, when he was healthy, was a very elite back. But clearly, he's been having a hard time staying on the field. You still have J.J. Watt anchoring that defense. They were good. And I think for them to go on the run that they had in order to make the playoffs, that spoke high volumes of really seeing what this team was able to do. When you can have a signal caller in there that you make defenses and defensive coordinators sort of game plan. Now, clearly, we saw the body of work is very limited. Yeah, it's very limited, but, I mean, I think right now you have to say he's clearly an upgrade over Ryan Mallett, who was let go. He's definitely an upgrade perhaps over Tyler or T.J. Yates. And Brian Hoyer, who just could not get it going. And I think if you look at the lack of success for the Houston Texans in the playoffs, at least in most recent years, has been the quarterback play. So I'm willing to take a chance, and I like what Rick Smith, the GM, has done down there in Houston, and rolling the dice on a young 25-year-old quarterback who really had an opportunity to learn behind a Hall of Fame caliber guy and Peyton Manning, and hopefully they can turn it around because they do have some pieces. So I wouldn't dismiss the whole Houston Texans, and you're right, it's a shocker.
For sure.
I think that this the NFL really benefited from that in terms of having an opportunity to have the headlines.
The other key is, I would say, is that, I mean, depending on the Andrew Luck situation, but even with that, I mean, that is arguably the worst division in football. I mean, that is an infinitely winnable division year in and year out, because no matter how good Luck is, and I think he was hurt last year and he'll have a bounce back, the team around him is not very good. So that team goes as far as Luck can carry them, and, you know, can Luck carry them to 11 or 12 wins? For sure, because he's that good. But that division with the Jaguars still a ways off from being a good team, with the Titans, maybe they're on their way up, but I still think they're a ways off from being a consistently good team. The Texans have every opportunity to win that a division, not even being that good. So maybe they're seeing that too, right? I mean, there's an opportunity there. 9-10 to win that thing.
Yeah, and keep in mind, I think that in one thing, Tommy, you're saying, it's great points, and I mean a great assessment of that division, why it made so much sense to perhaps invest to get a quarterback that rather than drafting to bring into that division. Listen, I don't know what we're going to get from Andrew Luck and that Indianapolis Colts team, because you know, the roll the dice and make the trade for Trent Richardson never worked out. I think that still set them back. You know, T.Y. Hilton is sort of that proven wide receiver, but they haven't been able to have another guy opposite him. Andre Johnson was a guy, really just didn't work out clearly there. And then that tight end, I think it was Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleena, who's moved on to New Orleans. But the defense has been good, but clearly, you know, we thought that there was going to be a situation where they were going to let their head coach go, and Chuck Pagano was able to, you know, rectify things and was able to keep his job. But that division is so winnable, you know, with Jacksonville, who I like their young quarterback and their stud wide receivers and Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns. They upgraded their defense with Malik Thomas, but, I mean, it bears watching. And in Tennessee, you know, with Delanie Walker, and, you know, they haven't had a guy, and I've always said this, if you look at the Tennessee Titans, they haven't had perhaps a stud wide receiver. You know, I tried to go back and think about when was their last stud wide receiver. I thought, you know, and I thought about this with the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jacksonville Jaguars stud wide receiver was Jimmy Smith, and then they finally look like they've got some solid number one wide receivers. I don't see that from Tennessee as of yet. Delanie Walker was their leading pass catcher, and he's a tight end. But I do think that they will improve leaps and bounds bringing in the running back, DeMarco Murray. So it's a winnable division, and you got to roll the dice when you want to go after a young man like that. Definitely got to roll the dice. Tom, my friend.
Eagles, what are you
Well, no, go ahead. Real quickly, last one.
No, yeah, I was going to ask what you guys thought about them. I think they hit a reset button there in a successful way. Personally, I think I like a ton of their moves. Basically, I mean, to get out of those contracts without having to cut those players, to literally get that money off of the cap and move up in the draft a pretty a significant way. I mean, I think it was a realization they're not winning this year. But I thought those moves were impressive, especially when you stack them up against the head-scratching of personnel moves that they've been doing over the last 2 years.
Well, that was all Chip Kelly, and I think that they're trying to rid themselves of all the moves. You know, Sam Bradford, I don't know if they really have a lot of confidence in Sam Bradford and his ability to be sort of a quote-unquote franchise quarterback. You know, look, losing Jeremy Maclin, as well as losing, you know, you lost Jeremy Maclin, you let DeSean Jackson go, you let LeSean McCoy go. You had a lot of talent. And when I say you, the Philadelphia Eagles had a lot of talent on that offensive side of the ball. It just, you know, look, Chip Kelly made a lot of moves, and the question remains to be seen, how will this team transition from Chip Kelly to Doug Peterson? That will be the big, big question moving forward. And, you know, the NFC East, I don't know if that's a division. You know, I don't think if you could look on paper and say, hey, look, Washington, it's not going to be as strong as they were last year. And, I mean, neither team, any of those teams were very strong. I think Washington kind of won it by default. But it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. And I think Philadelphia is perhaps headed in the right direction. 347-324-5839, 347-324-5839. I want to touch on this Carmelo Anthony comment that he basically said that, you know, the Knicks, they have to be a major player. And he said, we have to be a major player in free agency come this year. They're going to have to be a major player in free agency. Well, what is so interesting about this is the fact is that you only have $18 million. You only have $18 million in cap space. And yet, with that $18 million, you know, where are you going to address the need? Like, I'm looking at this team, and everybody's on everybody's mind is, oh, we got to go get a point guard. We got to go get a point guard. Until you rectify your offensive scheme and strategy and philosophy, you don't really need an elite point guard to come in there and play in the triangle. Phil Jackson had success winning championships without elite point guards. Steve Kerr, John Paxson, Ron Harper. Didn't have elite stud, B.J. Armstrong. Didn't have a stud elite point guard. And this is the problem that I have with a lot of Knicks fans. Oh, Rajon Rondo, Mike Conley. You do not need that help there. You can get by with a Jose Calderon. You need another stud, perhaps at small forward. You need another stud, somebody that opposite of Carmelo Anthony can put the book bag on and carry the load. In the NBA alone, you cannot win just with one player. You cannot win sometimes with two superstar players. Look at Oklahoma City. Look at the trials and tribulations they're going through as an organization, trying to win with just basically two players. And I've said it before. I'll say it again. Sam Presti, the decision to keep Serge Ibaka over James Harden. The league is now a perimeter-oriented league. When you have three guys that essentially you don't have any perimeter scoring, it's very hard to expect them to have a lot of success. And, yeah, I know people can say, oh, well, they don't play defense. They don't play. No, but they struggle offensively. And people sit back and complain about the shot selection and choice of shots that Russell Westbrook. Well, I think in a lot of times he has to shoot. He has to be able to shoot. So it's just one of those things that I just think that it's just fascinating that the things he's going to say. I think the best way he could help the Knicks is basically rescinding his no trade clause. I think that's the best way he could help the Knicks. I'd be very honest about that. You know, it's very interesting to see how it plays out. 347-324-5839. 347-324-5839. Mario Manningham is still upcoming, a former Giant. We'll talk with him as well as right now taking a sneak peek. It looks like it's a good game here. I thought that this year, if anything, that came out of the March Madness thus far, in terms of the brackets, we were going to see some early matchups in the play-in games. I thought that this was going to be something that was very, very interesting. So, for example, you had Florida Gulf Coast playing Fairleigh Dickinson, and Florida Gulf Coast wins, like I said before, started the show off 96-65. Then you have Wichita State and Vanderbilt doing battle. And then tomorrow you have Holy Cross and Southern and, you know, no disrespect to the schools, but it's like, you know, it's the early game. But you have Michigan and Tulsa, you know, Big Ten versus American, what do you call it, American Conference, American Coastal Conference. Now, what is it? It's All-American Conference, something, All-American Conference. I don't even know what it is. It's a conference Tulsa's in. But I think that it's going to be very interesting to see these types of teams in a situation where they're, you know, it's early on. You know, you normally you would have the play-in games. I know for years you would have the two Cinderellas and they try to beat each other's heads in an effort to try to make the NCAA, you know, play to continue the wisdom saying survive and advance. But it hasn't been the case with them. So I think that it's a great job in that regards to, you know, what they are offering, you know. 347-324-5839, 347-324-5839. Taking a sneak peek at some of the NBA action. You know, you're going to probably see a lot of the stuff around this time of the year. You're going to see a lot of these games and stuff, and the NBA will scale back some of the schedule and stuff like that. But I think it's so unbelievable tonight that you have the Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs. They're doing battle, and it's going to be one of those things that moving forward, I think you have arguably, I don't know if you can say it's the game of the year that's going to take place on you know, it's going to be those one of those things where it's, if you're going to have perhaps the game of the year, and I got to say with the NBA and David Stern, Adam Silver, I've been singing these guys' praises. I've sang his praises. The NBA's decision to go to a Saturday night primetime game was unbelievable. The smartest thing that they ever could have done. It's take your product and put it on a day where people are getting together, people are having events. It's a Saturday. Nobody has to work the next day unless you're Gerald Brown and Howie C on the Bottom Line Sports Show on Sirius XM NBA Radio, Sirius Channel 207, XM 86, and on your Sirius XM app. But for the most part, Saturday night is a night that, look, college basketball figured it out. College football figured it out. And I never could understand why, just why, that the NBA wouldn't put their games in prime time, other than a Thursday night game and the Thursday night game, and I think back then it would be the Tuesday night games. So you had two Tuesday night and Thursday night games. Nobody was watching the West Coast games. West Coast game starts at 10:30 at night. You're not watching that. You might, you know, you might peek around at certain points and stuff, but for the most part, people will watch it on a Sunday, Saturday night. You know, Saturday, Sunday night, it works well with football because football is a totally different animal. You just can't compare yourself to that. But I thought it worked so well. And they've had some matchups where it's like, okay, we got something. And I tell you, this matchup Saturday night, in the mortal words of Duke Tango, world-renowned Duke Tango, Al Cash, for their work on, you know, with the EBA, EBC class, the Entertainment Basketball Classic in 55th Street. Oh, baby. You have the San Antonio Spurs hosting the Golden State Warriors. San Antonio went up to Golden State about a month ago and, again, got shellacked. I had went on record and said I didn't think that the Spurs, based upon the way they played against them, could compete against the Golden State Warriors. The San Antonio Spurs have not lost at home. Now, they're playing they played Chicago, which I didn't think was a tough stretch. I think they played Oklahoma City last Saturday. I didn't think that was a tough stretch. And yet the fact is I looked at this game tonight against the Clippers, who are in the process of losing, as perhaps maybe a big, big challenge for them moving forward. But I looked at this game tonight as a sort of stumbling block. And if the Clippers are able to beat them, I still don't think that will take away from Saturday night showdown. It is going to be of epic proportions, a true showdown. You know, two teams that essentially perhaps in all likelihood would meet for the East Western Conference Finals. It's going to be fun. It really is going to be fun to see how it plays out. And bears watching. It really, really bears watching. Here on the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown, how we see. It's Gerald Brown, how we see. Eddie Murphy, the whole family. 347-324-5839. Pretty much, again, like I said before, Tulsa. Thinking about the Tulsa Hurricanes, Golden Hurricanes. But you had Toronto, looks like they're on their way to a win, 103-84. Big bounce back win to a tough loss against the Chicago Bulls the other day. You have the Indiana Pacers taking care of business, 103-98. You have the Orlando Magic, 116-110 over Denver Nuggets. You have the Brooklyn Nets scoring 131 points versus the Philadelphia 76ers. And then the last game on the docket tonight, you have the Sacramento Kings traveling to play the Los Angeles Lakers there. DeMarcus Cousins will be back in action. And I just had to look at the stat line. Bogdan Bogdanovic led the scorers and stuff like that. No, you know, with the Nets with really 44 points, you know, and seeing everybody got in the scoring column from, you know, Donald Sloan with 9 points. I think, I think really the only person, Thomas Robinson, was the only person that didn't score, but everybody scored. Everybody was scoring up and down that lineup, from Chris McCullough, who had 1 point, Shane Larkin had 10, Sean Kilpatrick, 19 points. So that's a big, big win for the Brooklyn Nets, 19-48, and I mean, they're going to have a very interesting offseason. But Indiana Pacers, again, a nice win against the Boston Celtics team that's been very, very red hot. And the standings are going to go. The playoff standings are just going to be up and down, up and down. Like right now, you have the Bulls that are in, and that 7th seed, 36-31. So, again, the Pacers have been sliding someone, and the Celtics have been very, very hot. Believe it or not, 2.5 games really separate the Toronto Raptors from the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I know the Cavs lost the other day against the Charlotte, the Utah Jazz. That's the last game of a road trip again. It really wasn't something a big concern, but I don't think that the Cavs really have anything to play for other than when the postseason starts. And I'm going to say on record, I really believe that they won't have anything to play for until maybe, you know, again, when they get to the NBA Finals. I don't think there's anybody that poses any type of threat to them once they get into the at least the early stages of the playoffs. That about wraps up the show tonight. I'd like to thank Emmanuel Akbar for joining us. Vashti Hurd, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. Don't forget, we'll do it all over again next Tuesday. I'm Gerald Brown, your host. Bottom Line Sports Show is out. We say peace.